I'm Cass Harrington, and before we take a trip to the farm, we're going to go over our local and regional news. President Barack Obama switched his position on Thursday and said millions of Americans should be allowed to renew individual coverage plans now ticketed for cancellation under the current healthcare law. The immediate impact on consumers was unclear, though both industry spokesmen and state insurance commissioners swiftly warned that higher prices could result from the president's rapid turnaround. Among the other concerns surrounding the healthcare law is that too few young, healthy people are signing up. The Associated Press reports early enrollment studies suggest a trend that could cause insurance premiums and deductibles to rise sharply. Officials in a handful of states said those who had managed to sign up were generally older people with medical problems. Insurers warned that they need a wide range of people signing up for coverage because premiums paid by adults in the younger and healthier group between 18 and 35 are needed to offset the cost of carrying older and sicker customers who typically generate far more in medical bills than they contribute in premiums. According to a report released Wednesday by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, a total of 701 Hoosiers have signed up for health care coverage under the federal government's website. The trend has covered the Affordable Care Act in the past and has two episodes posted on our website, WNIN.org. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops elected Louisville's Archbishop Joseph Kurtz to its next president on Tuesday. Kurtz assumes his role as dozens of dioceses sue the Obama administration over a requirement for health insurance that covers contraceptives. He says despite their differences, the church can have a productive relationship with the administration and other branches of government. The Indiana Department of Transportation, NDOT, on Friday announced plans to rename the nearly 21 miles of existing Interstate 164 in Vanderburg and Warrick counties to Interstate 69 in a year or so. Pending final approval from the Federal Highway Administration, the new signage will be installed during a transition period over a few months during the fall of 2014. And finally, numbers released Thursday by the Kentucky Housing Corporation show the number of homeless veterans jumped 37% in the last 4 years. The report indicates that the higher numbers are in part a result of troop withdrawals in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, beginning in 2009, as well as an increased effort by various organizations to count homeless veterans. The proportion of veterans in the overall homeless population in Kentucky increased this year as well to greater than 10%. If the trend continues, the report warns, Kentucky will be among the top 10 states for homeless veterans. That's your local and regional news. Stay with us for today's conversation about local farms. Today's conversation about access to local food starts where else but on the farm. I visited Off the Fence Farm just a few miles outside Evansville to talk with Gwen and Kenneth McTaggart, a young couple who started tending to their family's plot of land just 2 years ago. They've since started a CSA, which is a community-supported agriculture initiative, which, you know, 25 people right now are subscribing to a weekly share of their vegetable crop. And they also sell produce at farmers markets, and they have an interesting concept called a cow share program where people can have farm fresh milk at their disposal. So let's take a listen to that and visit Off the Fence Farms.
My name is Kenneth McTaggart. I am a co-owner of Off the Fence Farms.
I'm Gwen McTaggart. I'm a co-owner in Off the Fence Farms.
The first thing that sticks out right now where we're standing are the goats.
Yeah.
Could you introduce me to the goats?
There's Cracker, the white one. Her daughter is the brown one, and that's Zesta. And then the one that has the long ears is an Alpine, and that is Goldie. And then this is her daughter, and she's half Alpine and half La Mancha, and that's why she's got little ears. And that's Clarabelle. But they're actually, we're going to not be doing goats anymore.
What did you get them for originally?
The milk. They're dairy goats. Originally, like, my friend had dairy goats, and my mom had never been able to drink milk until trying their milk, which is raw goat milk. So that's why we originally got dairy goats.
Since we are doing cows and dairy, we want to kind of focus on that and get our pasture organized as doing a rotational grazing method. And after we get that down, then we'll move on to other things.
Tell me again, there was a reason why you do that rotational grazing. Either of you can answer what that does for the ground, the grass, the cow, and if I remember, the chickens. Is that right?
It's the way it happened in nature. You know, all of the herd animals would be together really close as they were eating and moving just to protect themselves from predators. So we're trying to mimic that in nature. Generally, what happens in nature is what's going to be best in, you know, a farm setting. And the reason that it's best for them to be tight together, it forces them to eat everything that's right there before moving on to a fresh spot so that they're not picking and choosing, because then you're going to have all of the undesirable things in your pasture over time, because those are the things that's growing up and reseeding and not the yummy stuff. So
undesirable things like what?
Well, more like weedy type things. I haven't researched all my grasses and my weeds and stuff. I just know that there are some things they like to eat and some things that they would skip over if given the choice. It's sort of like providing your kid with this large buffet of foods that contain sweet things and broccoli. And of course, most kids are going to go for the sweet things and not the broccoli, although my kids are a little weird and they might eat the broccoli.
That's a good problem to have. Yeah. But in terms of the consumer, why would they want a cow that's, first of all, pastured, but also, you know, rotated out onto different parts of the field?
Well, the cow is a healthier cow. You're not going to see the diseases, and the lifespan in a pastured dairy cow is a lot longer than a conventional dairy cow in general. There have been tests that are done, and the CLA content, which is conjugated linoleic acid, is higher in pastured cows. If the animal is healthy, then the milk is going to be healthier.
Can we visit the cows?
Yes.
I heard one talking when you were talking.
There's Cowborg, and there's has a chicken on his
chicken
back.
Perch.
I want to get a picture of that.
That chicken's getting a ride.
He's our wild guy.
Pretty wild.
So what you were saying, there's something about having the chickens?
With the cows and chickens living together in symbiosis, the cow manure has 7 basic enzymes for a chicken can live. Well, you see in the Serengeti how the elephants and the birds will live really close-knit together, and the birds will come in and eat the poop or whatever, and it just helps fertilize the whole ground all together, and it helps the grass and whatever grow, and the cows are just stomping away on the grass. It helps massage the soil and makes it vibrant. And just even the chicken manure, it's so hot where the diseases and the bacteria will actually come to the chicken manure and freak out and then die because it's so destructive to the bacteria itself, and it just kills E. coli. And that's why we need the chickens follow closely to the cows. So
they're nature's sanitizers. They scratch through the cow patties and pick out the larvae.
Yeah,
the chickens do. They pick out all the fly larvae. And
the farm almost takes care of itself.
It should take care of itself once we, and with a little help. I mean,
I'd say a lot of help.
Yeah. A lot. It's all relative, I guess. I feel like this is an easier way of doing it than conventional dairy, because we don't have to deal with the problem of where does the poop go. Because in a conventional dairy, the poop is confined to, you know, usually a concrete pad. And here, it's spread out, and it's fertilizing our pasture as they eat. And, of course, then the chickens are coming up behind, and they're the manure spreaders. And they spread it out so that it's spread out evenly across the pasture. And that's another reason for the rotational grazing, so that you can control where your nutrients are going. You want them spread out evenly throughout the pasture and not concentrated in one spot. Like, they might have a favorite spot that they want to lounge under, and it's just better to try to get those nutrients spread out.
So that, you know, that's a plus. But what are some challenges that conventional dairy farmers don't have to deal with?
Some of the challenges that we've faced in trying to do a grass-fed only setting is that some of the cows are not, because of breeding, they're not accustomed to surviving on just grass and hay. And so their metabolisms are a little bit screwed up, and they almost need grain to exist. So it's hard to find the right cows for the purpose that we're trying to use them for. And also production is way lower. Like, the cows that we have, when they were getting grain, their production was like 8 gallons a day, and we're down to like, it's less than half. We're getting less than half the production.
This was something that really struck me. You had a trough outside with, was it 8 different compartments?
Mm-hmm. Actually, 16 compartments.
16 compartments.
But we only do an A choice. You're talking about the minerals. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, explain to the listeners briefly how that works.
Well, the whole idea behind it is that cows have the ability to know what they need. So most people give a mineral supplement that's been pre-mixed as, you know, according to what traditional, you know, the conventional people say that cows need. But this program divides that up. It's 22 different minerals, but it divides it up into eight different blends. There's a blend that balances the deficiencies in short grass or immature grass, and there's one that balances the deficiencies in mature grass. And then there's like an alkaline balancer and an acid balancer. It's interesting because their needs can change according to what they've been eating even throughout the day. So they can kind of just pick and choose what they need. And we can look at what is missing, like how much they've eaten, and see, oh, they seem like they're lacking in this. And so it's also a good diagnosis and just a good affirmation that, you know, they're eating well.
So based on which compartment is lowest, mm-hmm. in a certain mineral, you can tell what deficiency the cow might have, yes. in their diet.
Yes.
You mentioned a program where you can actually almost lend your cow to people who might be interested in having their own farm fresh milk, right?
Right. We have a cow share program. Basically, the idea behind it is that it's not practical for most families to own their own milk cow, because cows just give a lot of milk, and also you're tied down to milking at least once a day, if not twice, which, you know, you can't just pick up and go on vacation. You have to find someone to babysit that's willing to milk a cow. So what we do is different families go in and they buy these cows together that we manage and take care of for them. And then we milk and they pay a boarding fee and come each week to pick up their share of the milk.
That was me talking to Gwen and Kenneth McTaggart, the owners of Off the Fence Farm here in Evansville. We have still more to come on our conversation about local farms, but quickly, we're going to take a break.
You're listening to The Trend on 88.3 WNIN-FM. Support today comes from Evansville Day School, partnering with parents to offer a student-centered education program for students junior pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. More information at evansvilledayschool.org or at 812-476-3039. Still to come on the program, Joshua Academy founder and board president Reverend Larry Rasko on why a goat farm has become an extension of the classroom. That's coming up as The Trend continues.
I held the truth in my arms. It's a house and a farm, and a wife and my children to wait on me.
You're listening to The Trend. I'm Cass Harrington. And so we visited a small family-owned farm. Now we will hear from Ken Meter, who is a food systems analyst and the president of Crossroads Resource Center. He visited Evansville just a few weeks ago to present his findings on Evansville's local farm economy. Let's have a listen. Hi, Ken. Thanks for talking with me. So first, I just wanted a little background from you. I know you've done some interviews with farmers, well, many interviews with farmers across the country and around the world. So tell me a little bit about how you got into this.
Well, sure. I've basically been, for about 40 years, sort of puzzling over how we develop a food supply that's more localized and also a little bit more consistent in helping us protect our environment. And that's led me to work with lots of farmers, you know, including firsthand work in a dairy barn and, you know, trying to work in a, you know, plowing fields and just doing the day-to-day chores of a farm to know what that's like, but also interviewing farmers really globally, as well as some academic work to learn how to put a strategy together. And it's work I've pretty much mounted on my own without a lot of support, because I sort of got insights from farmers a long time ago who told me things about the economy that really are hard to find if you're not a farmer, because you're not seeing the economy the way that a farmer views it, with the risk that they face and the conditions they have.
And I know you gave a talk a couple weeks ago. It was hosted by the Wellborn Foundation. And I understand that you have some research that's specific to the Evansville area.
I do indeed. And the Evansville study was about the over the last 10 or 12 years. And since you asked for my background, I'll just tell you a little bit more about how that came to be. But I've started doing these studies of a local farm and food economy. And what I found is that people who hire me to do that study, I do the research, and then I often come out and speak and present the findings to mayors and to public officials, trying to make the case that economic development dollars that we now spend on other economic opportunities could perhaps be better spent on really creating the conditions that would make a local food system more attractive to farmers and processors alike.
And what insights were you able to pull from your analysis of the local food economy here in Evansville?
You have a total of about $1.1 billion leaving Southwest Indiana each year based on the food system we have. And that's double the value of all the crops and livestock produced by all the farmers in the region. So it's a very huge loss. There's a real kind of interest in people to get back to smaller farms, to simplify farming, to really focus on growing food for local markets. And that's very exciting, but it's not really supported by our economic infrastructure. It's not supported by our tax policy. It's not supported by our public investment policy. So the question would be if the mayor or the city council or the economic development officials for Evansville could invest in the local food economy the way they've invested in some of the housing developments that have been developed, or the commercial enterprises. We sort of tend to think of development as something that happens at a large scale, where we invest in one big piece of property that will return a tax base over the long haul. And my argument would be that it would actually be much better to invest in some of these smaller scale activities that over time would build a collective impact of helping feed Evansville people from local food, building more of a sense of wealth being created in the region, because a lot of large projects tend to perpetuate this idea that you invest in something, it creates a tax base, but it also produces a large flow of money away from your region.
Is there anything we can do to improve access to local food and healthy food? I'm thinking about price and making it more affordable.
Well, I'm not sure we're going to make food less expensive. I think, we're in a situation where farming is undervalued in our economy, and so we've basically made the decision we want to have cheap food, and we have a lot of people eating actually the wrong food. So, 10% of the residents of Metro Evansville have diabetes. That's one of every 10 people. And the medical costs that Southwest Indiana takes on to pay for the medical costs of being obese and diabetic is $217 million a year, another loss of money. So we're buying cheap food and we're giving that money to the medical system instead.
What were you able to conclude about your research in Evansville that kind of how we can change that paradigm from consuming food from outside the region and focusing more on the resources we have right here?
Well, I think, the only thing I just sort of say to sum up is that, we've now, just in this little glimpse of the food system, we're coming up with $1.3 billion of losses to the region. And I think the question is, how long can Evansville sustain that? And what I told people when I was speaking a couple weeks ago was, it's very generous of you to subsidize the rest of the economy this way, but how long can you keep that up? And how long can you work other jobs so you can pay the cost of farming for distant markets and buying food from far away? I think it's a real strong shift in our thinking to move to a system that's more localized, but I just see so many ways we can benefit.
That was me talking to Ken Meter, a food analyst who was hosted by the Wellborn Baptist Foundation here in Evansville just a few weeks ago. He's putting the finishing touches on his research. He had interviewed 11 farmers in the area, and we'll post it to our website when it becomes available. So coming up, we are going to move into the second half of the program. If you imagine this show as a plot of land, as your farm, we just tilled the land and looked at it from a kind of a broad view of what the situation is. In the second half, we're going to plant the seeds and see what is growing and happening in our community. So coming up first, let's hear from Christine Dawson, the executive director of Urban Seeds. But before that, we'll take a quick break.
You're listening to The Trend here on 88.3 WNIN FM and online at WNIN.org. Support today comes from Rabin Tire and Auto Service, a proud sponsor of WNIN programming. Rabin's trained technicians provide complete auto service, including brakes, alignment, oil and lube, and all recommended maintenance, along with tire brands like Michelin and Goodyear. Information on the web at RabinTire.com.
We're going to listen to a clip of me talking to Christine Dawson, the director of Urban Seeds. It's a nonprofit here in town that's kind of reworking its inner management and has some really interesting plans ahead for how to bring local farms into the marketplace here in the community. I'm here with Christine Dawson, the executive director of Urban Seeds, and she has previously worked at the local food co-op and the Newburgh Farmers Market. Welcome to the program, Christine.
Thanks for having
me. Thank you for being here. So you started with Urban Seeds back in March.
Yeah, about March.
What kind of things had been going on before you took over?
Well, before I started, the organization started in about 2005, and it started out as an urban gardening collective, and they just did some urban gardens around town. And then they started a farm-to-school initiative type thing a couple years ago and worked with a couple schools on a hoop house, worm composting, and organized small farmers markets.
And which
too.
Schools?
Glenwood was one of them. Uh-huh. I'm not quite sure about the other ones because it was before my time.
Today, in fact, kind of you're kicking off a new initiative. What sort of things are in the future for Urban Seeds?
We are trying to focus on bringing local farmers and consumers together. We want to promote local farms and create more awareness about where you can get good food from local sources.
How can you do that?
Well, the main thing that we're working towards right now is trying to get an all-local grocery store that farmers can just bring their goods to, and we can sell hopefully in a consignment type fashion so that we don't have to mark up at all, so people can still get good prices and farmers can just get the money directly back. And we also, we want it to be year-round and open 6 days a week, and farmers wouldn't have to be there, so they can work on farming instead of being at a market to sell their goods.
One of the things I've heard from farmers and from the food analyst, the market analyst I spoke with, is a big thing would be bringing those local farms into a marketplace setting where the food obviously isn't subsidized like most conventional produce,
sure.
But it's more accessible to the wider community. So mm-hmm. how exactly would you be able to price the produce that way where it's reasonable?
Well, we're not sure the structure of it yet. And hopefully, you know, we'll get the funding that we need to just run the store. And
are you getting consultation or help on how to make that possible?
We are, yeah. We are. We're actually working with June Miller, who's a consultant for the Nonprofit Resource Network. And we are we're just looking into different places. We've done a couple field trips to different farmers market type situations, and we're looking into other ones to talk to them about their experiences.
You know, what towns, what cities are doing this well?
Well, like, I'm not sure who's doing it well yet, because it's a pretty new thing, and they call places kind of similar food hubs. We're not quite the same in my mind yet, and we're trying to figure out the exact wording of what to call ourselves still, because a food hub is more like wholesale and distribution too, whereas we just want to be a place that has, you know, information on all the farms. We want to educate on local food. We want to help teach people how to grow their own food as well, and so we want to be more of like a community center almost, that can offer all of the goods that the area has to offer. So and in a year-round fashion, so that like farmers will be encouraged to have a longer growing season in the area, because you can grow most things, not most things, but you can grow some things year-round. Oh, here,
yeah. I'm thinking you know, lettuces and squash,
like carrots went real late last year too, and there's a couple farms doing it, like Off the Fence Farms grow a lot, like, and they grow almost year-round. Vegetable Land is another one that does, and they just have a CSA right now, so you can't just buy their stuff, you have to be a part of their CSA. With the farmers markets being only like May to October usually, I want to show farmers that there's a venue that they could sell goods year-round.
So it sounds like more than just a place to buy produce.
Definitely.
Or food. It's something really connected.
Yeah, we want to connect everyone who wants good food to the people who are growing it, and we want to educate the people who don't know that much about food and nutrition, and who don't know you can get wonderful things in the area.
Well, that's another facet of this conversation. I mean, we talked about accessibility and price, but also lower income families here in the community may not even be aware of, you know, what that difference is in eating whole produce. I mean, healthy food.
And that's we want to offer. That's why we want to do cooking classes and stuff too. And we'll have nutrition classes maybe too. We definitely want to draw in a low income customer base. I guess customer base isn't even a good word for it. We want to just serve really the Evansville as a whole, and anyone who is trying to find good things to feed their family, and show people that maybe they should be trying to find good things to feed their family if they're not.
But... Well, I look forward to following up with you and seeing what happens in the future. My last question, I have to wonder, you know, Voice Evansville revealed their findings after surveying more than 1,000 people in the community about what they wanted to see happen. And one of the three things was healthy green spaces. And one of the three things, I mean, a top priority of many people here in the community. So that had to have been encouraging.
Oh, definitely. And it's, yeah, getting feedback like that from the community just makes us, you know, think it'll work all the more to help educate people more, because this is what they want.
Well, I understand you had been approached by Voice. Do you see that being maybe a partnership in the future?
I think so. We're going to go to their next meeting. I think it's November 19th. And we're going to, I think they're doing breakout groups at that meeting. So we're going to try to have enough board members there to be in all the breakout groups so that we can collaborate with people trying to do similar things in the community. So,
well, Christine, thank you so much for coming on the program.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me and talking about this.
That was Christine Dawson, the director of Urban Seeds. They recently received a grant to encourage the level of local food economy and health in the community. So in that conversation I had with Christine, she told me that part of the solution in changing the marketplace paradigm is shifting the priorities of current buyers, but also educating a new generation of farmers and consumers. And so I am joined by Reverend Larry Rasko, who is the pastor at Nazarene Baptist Church. And he is also the director of the board at Joshua Academy
Charter School.
And I'm really excited to have you here on the program today. I understand that Joshua Academy, first of all, had a booth at the Fall Festival, and they were selling goat sandwiches that just flew off the shelves.
Yeah, we have a couple of dishes that we do. One was a recipe created by Bonita Stewart. We call it Sloppy Billy, where you normally have Sloppy Joes. Well, we have gourmet ground goat meat, and she made a vegetable-based sauce that was really good, and it's extremely healthy. One of the healthy choices last year.
That's what I heard, because goat meat is actually pretty lean.
Goat meat is very lean. It's leaner than chicken. Huh. It is actually the number one eaten red meat in the world, and so we do not have it readily available in our community, and that's one of the things we want to change.
Wow.
But it's very good.
Well, and like I said earlier in the program, you know, the first half of the conversation, we were kind of looking at what the local food economy here is in Evansville and access to healthy food. And so here in the second half, we're hearing about things that are either happening in the future or something that's going on now. And you're a testament to the present. You are doing something very incredible with some Joshua Academy students. Could you let the listeners in on what's going on at a goat farm in Pike County?
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, we are working on building a teaching farm with the intent. We call it empowering kids with an ag experience. And so we're looking to take next fall, where we actually have children, they'll be doing their core subjects, and then they'll actually do hands-on project-based learning. Agriculture is actually one of the core courses for middle school. And so I just think it's an amazing way of giving kids some hands-on learning and what I like to call it, the living experience. It's kind of like when you go to the 4-H fair and you ask a child about that rabbit. You better have a lot of time because they know everything there is to know. So we want to use animal husbandry. We'll use, raised bed gardening. We will be putting up a greenhouse. And even now, our children are involved in some animal husbandry, even at the charter school, and they have 36 raised beds as well as hydroponics. So they're growing vegetables, you know, even now. All summer they grew, and this was our largest year. They grew turnip, all the greens, lettuces, broccoli, cauliflower. Wow. One of the interesting things they really enjoyed was the potatoes. We grew four different kinds of potatoes this year. They grew artichokes, they grew tomatoes and cucumbers, and then of course they ate them. And kids were saying, "Hey, my mom said bring home some bell peppers. You know, we're going to have stuffed bell peppers." So kids are learning to enjoy, and they're really learning not just the joy of growing things from seeds or small plants, but the joys of harvesting and showing them how to prune a plant, how to tie up a tomato plant, how to pick vegetables. One of the things that our customers really enjoy is our greens, and for two reasons. One of the reasons they love them is because they're very, very tender, and they're very clean. And our children, I've taught them how to pick collard greens, for instance, and we snap the stem and then we lay it in our hand. And so people, when they get it, it's just stacked and it's so clean. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have a lot of people in our community enjoying their greens this Thanksgiving because a lot of folk bought the greens up and froze them so that they would have them for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you have customers. How does that work?
Well, we all of our children, they've got parents and grandparents, and so it's a lot of the grandparents that have heard about it. Uh-huh. And so we have a preschool as well, and so we've had the farmers market at the charter school where the kids are dropped off and picked up each day, and then we have our preschool where the children are picked up, and the preschool is actually at the Nazarene location. And so then a lot of our church members have heard about the greens as well. And we do have another harvest of mustard and collards, I guess, we'll be picking here pretty soon.
Huh. Well, it sounds like then it's an agro-business class even.
Well, it's allowing them to do a farmer's market, and they're making change, and they're learning how to interact with customers and work as a team. And so that's all part of it. Mm-hmm. And that's all part of, you know, agriculture. So you've got the math, you've got, you know, just everything. And so, and they're growing in a hydroponic unit right now. They've got three different hydroponic units in one.
And for the listeners who may not know, what is a hydroponic unit?
A hydroponic unit is actually comes from the word hydroponic, which is working water, where you actually grow vegetables in water using a type of media, whether it's hydrotone, which is like a little clay pellet, mm-hmm. or something like a coconut fiber. And you basically have a tank or reservoir of water, and you put the nutrients in the water, and then those nutrients are pumped to the vegetables, and you have a very controlled system. It's inside, so you're controlling the temperature. We have growing lights, and then we have the nutrients. And the best part, no weeds, and the kids learn to check pH. The pH has to be right. They know how to do that. And then they measure the nutrient levels, and so we have to calculate, you know, how many tablespoons and how many, you know. So it's fun, and they're just doing a great job.
That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of learning going on. How much inspiration has been there for making this a lifelong career even, or inspiring a new generation of farmers?
Well, we have been, you know, we've have done some work with Urban Seeds. We've mm-hmm. also partnered now with Purdue University and their Southwest Extensions. So we're actually working right now planning an ag camp where the kids will actually have a chance to, where the professors, they'll come down, and we're looking for a whole week where they will come down and have these different ag experiences. We'll do field trips. We've been very fortunate. The Department of Agriculture for the state of Indiana has awarded us a marketing grant. And so Gina Sheets, who is the director, Governor Mike Pence has given us an award for some of the things that the kids are doing. And so it's real exciting. The children have even hatched out chicken eggs. One of the local farmers, Mr. Riggs, you're talking about a great farmer. Mr. Riggs, he's awesome. But he gave us some fertilized eggs, and the kids hatched them out. I have some incubators. And so we have about 26 now, but we're going to keep 12. And so they have a chicken coop. And so the chickens should be laying. They're still pretty young. They weren't born until September, so got a little ways to go. But they'll be laying eggs. And so, you know, we've got kids saying, I think I want to be a vet, you know. And so that's real exciting. So the whole idea is to give them I call it using ACT to enlighten. That's giving kids a lot of experiences so that we can identify what they're passionate about. And if we can, and the earlier we can identify what they're passionate about, then we can get them on that path to accomplish that. And so, you know, we have a relationship with Purdue. USI is very much involved in some of the things that we're doing in the classroom. And so, you know, we're real fortunate. The kids love it. And it's something that I'm hoping we can expand to more and more children.
And it sounds like really diverse experiences. There's an opportunity to get your hands in with vegetables or tagging a goat. It's mm-hmm. so interesting.
Yeah, it's intentional. Uh-huh. It's intentional. Our breeding, we just wrapped up our breeding program for the year. Actually, it was last month. So in February, we'll be having, you know, some babies. And of course, we'll have some experience with some of the other kids that I mentor as they, you know, learn to tag, give inoculations and all of that kind of stuff.
And how old are the students we're talking about?
The students that I'm involved in mentoring, they're from middle school to high school. Mm-hmm. And some of them, they've been at the farm and have had some experiences. The younger children are kindergarten through the sixth grade, but we're looking to expand. And so as we move into middle school, they'll have more hands-on experiences with the animal husbandry piece.
Mm-hmm. Well, a big part of this conversation today was not just, you know, our local farm economy, but also changing how people can have access to healthy food and changing that relationship with healthy food. Have you been seeing that with the children? I mean, even you said enlightenment.
Yeah, absolutely, because I would probably never grow anything in a traditional garden again. And so these kids actually helped build the raised bed. Some of them are as little as, you know, 2 feet by 5 feet or 4 by 4. And so we actually used compost from an individual out on Kansas Road. And so the soil is already extremely rich. We have our own compost piles now. And so they built the beds. They have sown the seeds. They've learned how to harvest. They've learned how to fertilize. There's minimal weeds. They know how to do that. And so these are things that the kids can do at home. They can do it in a flower pot. They can do it outside. It doesn't take, it just needs to be a place where there's some sun. And they're learning to do this at home.
Mm. Well, and I think, too, after I spoke with Christine Dawson from Urban Seeds, like she said, a big part of changing this local food economy is changing the consumer's perspective.
Absolutely.
But also bringing up this new generation. And so do you think it's commonsensical now to these students who you said exposed to it early? You think it's something that will probably persist?
They absolutely love it. And it's, you know, for instance, our tomato plants were 8 feet tall. And to be able to find the plants and the little cherry tomatoes, tasting one right off the vine, and how sweet it was. Our kids are eating vegetables now.
Wow. Well, Larry, thank you so much for talking with me. That is Reverend Larry Rasko, the pastor at Nazarene Ministry Baptist Church here in Evansville, and he is also the founder and board president of Joshua Academy. We're going to take a quick break, and we will listen in on the final segment of The Trend.
I bought a goat. His name was Jim.
You're listening to The Trend here on 88.3 WNIN and online at WNINFM and WNIN.org. You can find a recording of this program when it goes up later next week, and find it online at our website, WNIN.org.
By the wool of the back, Anna tied him to a railroad track. He bucked and bowled with might and main, as round the curve came a passenger train. He bucked and bowled with might and main, coughed up that shirt and flagged the train.
You're listening to The Trend. I'm Cass Harrington. We've heard from farmers and educators and a nonprofit, but let's go back to Off the Fence Farm one more time. At the end of our interview, it got a little chilly, and we went inside and sat at their kitchen table. So I'm talking about Gwen and Kenneth McTaggart, and their family was kind of gathered around us. You might hear some kids in the background. But they told me about their life, their livelihood, and what it means to be a small farm here in Evansville and what it means to turn a profit. So how long have you been operating, the two of you, Off the Fence Farms?
This would be going on our second season of doing this, and which her dad started this 6 years ago. This just started farming.
It all started when my mom kind of got sick. We decided to do an organic diet as to try to heal her, which was expensive. At the time, I think our household number was like 12. So 12 people doing a totally organic diet where you buy everything, you know, we didn't grew very little for ourselves. That was really, really a burden on the budget. So we started expanding the garden and growing a more diverse range of vegetables. And, we got goats again, and all of a sudden dad came home with a bunch of chickens. And so that got us into the chickens, and, people wanted to buy our stuff. So we started selling a little bit out of the home, and then dad started taking the abundance to the farmer's market. And then he was and still is, he has his own construction company. And so he was working full time in that, and then trying to do a good sized, you know, small farm. And so about that time, Kenneth decided he wanted to be a farmer.
What had you been doing before, Kenneth?
For about 7 years, I was was working at the First Avenue Car Wash. I was assistant manager there. But my goal was just to do films and video production and doing commercials. And then my whole perspective and paradigm shifted just spontaneously. It's like, my whole passion just from one extreme to the next changed. And I believe it was just had to be God do that, because it was just spontaneously just looking up heirloom seeds. And I'm like, why in the world I'm doing this? And the next minute I'm like tilling and hoeing and pulling weeds. I'm like, I don't want to be a farmer. And it's just shifted like that. But overall, I love it because I can spend time with my family, and if Gwen has trouble with the kids, I can just run up to the house and, deal with issues and things. So it's great just to be able to have my family and my children next to me, and I can train them up into this way of life. I think it's a rarity to be able to do this as a way of living. I think we got away from that as far as humans or people in cultural in general, just living off the land and just being self-sufficient and not being dependent on prepackaged goods and dependent on other people to feed you.
It's actually kind of a growing phenomenon that younger folks are either buying their own plot of land or picking up a plot of their family's land and doing it themselves and leaving whatever job they were doing previously. And I wanted to know from your perspective, you said a paradigm shift. I mean, yeah, film is quite different. Was there something that happened that propelled you to this choice? I mean, you're right. You get to be connected to your family and the land, but it's a hard living. It's a hard living, hard work. You all are very dedicated, but what propelled you to this position?
I think just because I was gone a lot, to my work, just working, just the whole rat race in life, and just being gone total of maybe 8 or 10 hours a day, and I didn't want to be like the norm, just be able to be a father and trying to work and provide my family and only see my kids, maybe 3 hours or 4 hours a time, and then maybe the weekends, maybe to see more of them, and be able to train them the way a father should. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Having kids, yeah. I guess. When we had Jaden, I remember right after we had her, and then going back to work was really painful for me, I know, and I think it was hard for him too. And so I think then a few months later, he just decided he didn't want to do this anymore, this leaving and not seeing everybody. And thankfully, most people don't have the opportunity that we had with my parents had already sort of started this, and we just jumped onto their vision. So we were very, very blessed.
Well, so this was your second season. Were you able to turn a profit this time?
I don't know yet. I don't think so, because we it seems like when we come close to maybe making the farm like profitable, that we jump into something new. And so we jumped into the cows, which turned out to be really difficult. It was harder than we thought, but it's going to be a good thing. And it's been good even through the problems that we've had. It's been really good to share our cows with these other families and meet other like-minded people and really develop really strong relationships with them.
And our goal is for have her dad just to be retired and be able to stay home.
When I spoke with Christine, she talked about wanting, she called it a farm consignment market. But so is that something that would help you turn a profit if something like that was downtown?
Definitely. Because part of the problem with markets, although we like going to markets and seeing our customers and meeting new customers, we have to be there to sell our food. So it would be nice to have a place that we could take our vegetables to, and that they would sell it for us. And I know that you can sell to grocery stores in the same manner, but they have to mark it up so much that it becomes hard for the consumer then. I mean, part of our mission is to make things affordable.
Food can be a political statement for some people, but something that I think some people don't understand is when we talked about local food and organic food of yesteryear, there was this idea of, oh, that's so granola. But I've spoken to people of all political stripes, assortments, who are supportive of local food and for, libertarian reasons or Republican reasons, because local food has benefits in all areas, health, economics, development. And I happened to notice when I pulled in that someone had a Ron Paul sticker on their car. Is that either of your cars?
It is. Yes. At one time, all of our vehicles had Ron Paul stickers. Yeah, that's us.
So I have to ask, so does local food, does it link to your political values or moral values?
Yeah, it does. And not just local, but sustainable and well-raised food. Local is great, but I want to see farmers go beyond just providing local food and really provide food that is, that has been good to the environment and is going to be good to the consumer. Mm. Yeah, politics, I mean, because you were asking what's a way to make it easier on us, and politics, I think, does kind of play a role in that. We have regulations that makes things really hard on us. Generally, regulations mean expensive, and it's sort of a one-size-fits-all approach. The responsibility needs to be handed back to the consumer and back to the farmer to make the right choices for themselves and for the community and for the planet.
My last question, as a small family-owned farm, do you see any kind of immediate solutions to changing the current situation here where we rely so heavily on not only, I mean, not food from just outside the state, but, you know, outside the country, on the other side of the world, ways that we can change how much we rely on local food?
I don't really see an immediate or easy solution, because people are going to have to reexamine the way they see food. People are willing to invest in a really high quality car or high quality dishwasher or whatever, but they don't want to put much investment into their food. And maybe because it's consumed, but I don't think that people see the connection between food and health, and that food can be a very powerful healer, or it can also destroy, and it can make you really sick. I think that the farmers also need to reexamine the way that they view the consumer. We really feel drawn to our customers. It's kind of what keeps us going, is our interaction with our customer, because they need this food to live. It's very important to us to provide that. And so sometimes when it's like so hard, it's like, why are we doing this? And then I remember, oh, it's because Lisa needs to feed Cora. I love Lisa, but she brings her daughter out every week, and they have a vegetable CSA, so they get a share of our garden, and then she also has a share in our herd. So she brings Cora out, and they talk about the farm, and she sings, instead of Old MacDonald, she sings My Friend Gwen Had a Farm. And it's just really neat to see that.
That was Gwen McTaggart with her husband, Kenneth, at Off the Fence Farm. So there you have it. We've heard how our dependence on food from outside the region and limited access to healthy food is impacting our health and our economy. But efforts to shift that paradigm are growing. As we've heard from the interviews today, the biggest change starts with the consumer. As always, the stories does not stop here, so you can be sure to hear updates in the future from The Trend. If you want to know more about a person or project mentioned on today's program, head over to The Trends page on WNIN.org. If you liked a song you heard on the program, you can also find our playlist. Tune in next week for an in-depth look at happiness and economic development. Yes, there is one professor here who has identified a correlation. You don't want to miss it. The Trend is a production of WNIN in collaboration with the Evansville Courier and Press. This episode was produced by myself with help from Ryan Reynolds at the Courier and Press. My friend Tony Voss engineered today's live show, and the theme music was written by the talented Jeffrey Osman. I'm Cass Harrington. We'll talk next week. This is WNIN-FM, Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro.